Let me ask you to take your Bibles, please, if you would, and turn to Matthew chapter 2. We're concluding our series today that we've called Christmas Past, Present, and Future. Started out 3 weeks ago making a reference to the classic Charles Dickens novel called A Christmas Carol, in which we all know the central character, Ebenezer Scrooge, was a miserly, mean old man who treated everybody around him in a cruel manner, and all he cared about was making more money. And one Christmas Eve, he was visited by three ghosts. Obviously, this is a novel, and so I'm not preaching from this, but we just use this sort of as the backdrop. He was visited by the ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas present, and the ghost of Christmas future. And there's a lot of truth, a lot of very powerful truth that Dickens brought out in that story that applies to our lives. After Ebenezer was shown certain truths about his life and how he had been living, he awoke from that night a changed man and began to live his life very differently from that point on because of that experience. And we've been looking for the past 2 weeks, and we'll conclude today, at the real Christmas story, the coming of Jesus into the world, and how, because of the coming of Christ, everything in our lives can be different. Everything about our past, everything about our present, and everything about our future. The first week we saw how, because Christ came into the world, your past can be completely forgiven. It doesn't matter what you've done, it doesn't matter how bad your past is, a relationship with Christ means that your past is forgiven. Last Sunday, we saw how that baby in the manger was God with us, and how that means that because God is with us, we are never alone, we do not have to be afraid, and we do not have to be ashamed. Because Christ came into the world, our present is transformed. And today, I want to conclude this series by seeing how the coming of Christ changes our future. Look with me, if you would, at Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. I want to stop there for just a moment and talk about these first two characters that Matthew introduces here. The first is a man named King Herod. And the original Jewish readers who first read these words Matthew had written didn't need any explanation at all as to who King Herod was. The Roman Empire had come into that area years before Jesus was born, and they had taken over that territory, and Herod ruled over this particular region, and he was absolutely insane with power. He was called Herod the Great, but that was a title he gave to himself. He had such an ego and was so insecure, he gave this title to himself, Herod the Great, and he insisted that everyone refer to him that way. He was notoriously insecure, famously insecure, and whenever there was a threat of any kind to his throne, he would react violently. Just to give you a quick sample, during the course of his reign, he put to death his brother-in-law, his mother-in-law, his own wife, and three of his own children, because he was convinced in his mind that they were trying to undermine him and challenge him for his throne. Caesar Augustus said sarcastically, "It's safer to be Herod's pig than Herod's son." This is the reputation this man had. He was so insecure that when he knew he was about to die, he gave orders that a number of prominent citizens in the area were to be put to death on the same day that he died, just so he could be assured that there would be grieving and mourning and weeping in the city on the day of his death. Thankfully, the people who were given those orders didn't carry them out after Herod died because they said, well, he's gone. It's not going to matter now anyway. But that's how insecure this man was. So when the original readers read these words that King Herod was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him, we read that. It doesn't make any sense to us. But those people, they read it. It made perfect sense to them. When Herod got disturbed, people ran for cover. When Herod got disturbed, bad things started happening. And so the people read that. They nodded their heads. This was some years later, but they would have said, oh, we remember Herod. We remember our parents talking about Herod. He was a crazy person, very disturbed. The second group Matthew introduces here are the wise men, or the magi, as they're called. We get our word magic from that. We don't know much about these men. Historical records tell us that magi studied astronomy and astrology. It's very possible that these men were royalty themselves, but we don't know much about them. Clearly, they knew about the prophecies of a king being born. They saw this star they'd never seen before, and they made the journey to Jerusalem to find this newborn king. When they arrive in Jerusalem, they did the logical thing. They went to the current king to ask about the birth of this future king. Verse 4 says, when Herod had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied. So what's taking place here is these wise men come to Herod. They said, we've seen this star. We know that it's a sign that the king of the Jews is born. So where is this king so that we can go and worship him? Well, Herod doesn't know. So he calls in all of the religious leaders and the scholars of the day. He brings them in there to his palace. And he says to them, hey, where is this Messiah to be born? And they say, in Bethlehem. That's Bible 101. Everybody knows that this king, this Messiah, is going to be born in Bethlehem. And in verse 6, they quote from the Old Testament prophet to provide some evidence for what they've just said. And the quote is, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel. Herod, as I said, was insanely jealous for his throne. He tolerated no rivals. So when he heard that this prophesied king had been born in his district, his paranoia rose to an all-time high. And he thinks, oh man, this new king is right here in my territory, and he puts this devious plan in place to track down this new king that he thinks is going to be a threat to his throne. Verse 7, then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and make a careful search for the child, and as soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. So the Magi head off to Bethlehem, and the next few verses tell us that when they saw Jesus, they were overjoyed. They bowed down and worshiped him. They gave him gifts. And I think that's the part of this passage that we're all most familiar with. But what I think we miss is some of the things that take place next. When it was time for them to leave and go home, something interesting happens. Look at verse 12. Having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. So why were these men warned by God not to go back to Herod and give him the location of Jesus? Because everything Herod had told them about how he wanted to go and worship this king was a lie. So instead of returning to Herod, instead of going back to him and telling him where Jesus was, they listened to this warning in the dream and they went home another way. So Herod's sitting there and he's looking at the clock And he's looking at the calendar, and days are going by. And as more and more time goes by, and Herod realized that they weren't coming back, suddenly, disturbed Herod becomes even more disturbed. And he's getting ready to do something incredibly violent. In verse 13, it says, when they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. This angel comes to Joseph again, just like we saw last week. And Joseph understood this was more than just a dream. This was an urgent warning from God to get Mary and to get Jesus and to flee out of town as fast as they possibly could. Verse 14, so he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. When you read all this, it seems unbelievable. It seems absolutely inconceivable that this baby could have such a powerful enemy who wanted to kill him. This grown man was so threatened by this little baby. It seems unbelievable. And as unbelievable as that is, what's even more unbelievable is that the very presence, the very coming of Jesus into the world was about to cause so much heartache. Look at the awful events that the birth of Jesus brought about. Verse 16. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted, because they are no more. Matthew quotes this passage from the Old Testament book of Jeremiah about an event that had taken place roughly 500 years before, when Babylon invaded Israel and destroyed Jerusalem. And in that process, they took all these captives and they gathered them, they held them in a place called Ramah. And many times in the Old Testament, Rachel, who was the wife of Jacob, is pictured as the mother of Israel, just to kind of help explain what Matthew's referring to here. So Matthew ties that old story to this event in Bethlehem, and in one verse he summarizes the horrendous heartache that's taking place. This little town of Bethlehem, this sleepy little town of Bethlehem, suddenly became this chaotic, horrific scene at the simple order of a madman. Herod learned that Jesus had been born and that Jesus was not just another baby. He was a king who had been prophesied to come and a potential challenger to his throne. And as I mentioned, Herod had lied when he said, hey, tell me where this king is so that I can go and worship him. He had no intention of worshiping him. He wanted to kill him. He wanted to eliminate him. And when the wise men outwitted Herod, he was furious. And he couldn't find out exactly where Jesus was, and so he decided to take a shotgun approach. He had one bit of information that he could go on, and that was that this future king would be born in Bethlehem. And so instead of sending people to Bethlehem and going door to door and asking if they've seen this child, no, he says, I'll take care of the situation. I'll just kill all the boys 2 years old and under. It had probably taken the wise men a long time to travel to this area. And then we don't know how long Herod had waited before he realized the wise men were not coming back. But enough time had passed that Herod decided, just to be safe, I'm not just going to kill the newborn babies, I'm going to kill all the boys from birth up to 2 years old. And so this nightmare in Bethlehem begins to unfold. It's a horrible scene to think about. We don't want to think about this at Christmas. We want to think about snow and reindeer and tinsel and all of that lovely stuff. There's a reason I'm bringing this out today. Just picture this scene. Try not to look at this as some distant 2,000-year-old event. Put yourself in this place. Imagine, if you would, in the middle of the night, soldiers pounding on doors, pulling babies from their mother's arms, screams filling the air, fathers trying to fight off these strong, well-armed soldiers to no avail, and blood running in the streets of Bethlehem. And all of that happened because of this tiny little baby named Jesus. And during all of this, here's the part that we miss. Joseph and Mary had to live as refugees in Egypt. The Bible tells us, verse 14, that they had to escape in the middle of the night. They probably had nothing but the clothes on their backs. Verse 19 says they stayed in Egypt until after Herod died. But that's not even the end of it. It goes on to tell us that when they returned to Israel, Herod's son Archelaus was now ruling in his place. And he was just as crazy. And so now they're warned again in a dream to flee once again, because Archelaus is probably going to be looking out for Jesus and trying to knock him off. So what effect did the coming of Jesus have on Mary and Joseph? Folks, it completely turned their lives upside down. Their future was forever altered because of Jesus. Can you imagine the dreams that Mary had had as an expectant mother? Just like any new mother would have. Dreams and plans of fixing up a pretty nursery with a little crib, you know, to put it in our terms. And maybe putting up blue wallpaper, or, you know, all the things that we love to do and dream of when that first child comes. Mary had all of those dreams. None of them came to pass. She had dreams of raising her boy and playing with him in their hometown and having a happy life. None of that came to pass. And Joseph's dreams of establishing a home with his new wife, of continuing his job there in his hometown and being able to provide for his family, none of that came to pass, all because of Jesus. All of that was taken from them, all because they chose to follow God's plan for their life. Their entire future had been changed. If someone were to ask me, "Phil, I'm thinking about becoming a Christian. Can you tell me, Phil, if I become a Christian, will my life become easier or harder?" And I would have to answer, yes. In some ways, your life will get easier when you choose to follow Christ. You get an inner peace you've never had before. You get to talk to the God of the universe as your personal Father. You get the presence of the Holy Spirit guiding you and comforting you. You have the assurance that your sins are forgiven. You have the promise of heaven when you die and eternity with Him. So I would say, yeah, if you become a Christian, in some ways your life will get easier. But I would also have to be honest and tell them, you need to understand also that if you become a follower of Christ, your life will get harder in many ways. We studied through 1 Peter for about 500 weeks. And we saw in 1 Peter that it tells us clearly, if you choose to follow Christ, you will be a stranger in this world. You will not fit in. By the way, Christian, if you're still trying to live for Christ and blend in with this world, you're on the wrong track. You will not fit into this world. You will not. You'll be a stranger. So that brings a change to life. You will now have to fight temptation, whereas before you didn't care about it. If you're a teenager in school, you may lose some friends because now you're following Christ. You're not doing what all of them do. If your employer is not a Christian, you may get passed over for a promotion because You're not willing to play the games or do some of the things that they want you to do that aren't right. Or you might be given the harder task at work just because you're not doing what the other employees are doing. Oh, and all of those, by the way, are first world problems. There are many people in the world this very day who, because they are following Christ, are being persecuted for their faith. And some of them put to death. So I would say, yes, if you choose to become a follower of Christ, your life will get harder in many ways. Right from the beginning of Matthew's story, we see that there is a hard side to Christmas. Yes, there is the sweet side, the nostalgic side of angels in the sky and shepherds in the field and the baby in the manger. There's that side of Christmas, and we're so thankful for that side of Christmas. But you know, I can never leave things well enough alone. I have to rip that cover off once in a while and take a real look at what the birth of Christ brought about. It wasn't all sweetness and love and sunshine. There's the other side. We see that choosing to follow Christ can bring about some very, very difficult things. Your life will never be the same. Forgive me this morning, I'm sorry. First week we saw how the coming of Christ changes your past. Last week we saw how the coming of Christ changes your present. But we also need to understand that the coming of Christ is going to change your future. As I said, following Christ will change your future in some wonderful ways, and we're so thankful for these things, and we never need to lose sight of these things. We're told that now we're no longer walking in darkness, but we're walking in the light. Praise God for that. The light has come to us. It has dawned on us. It has changed us. What a joyous blessing this is of the coming of Christ. We have the privilege of letting our lives be a part of His mission. Are you kidding me? What a wonderful privilege this is that we're included now in the mission of Christ in this world. We've been saved from hell. We'll be able to stand before God one day completely righteous. And we'll enjoy eternity in heaven with Him. The wonders and the blessings of Christmas, the things that they bring to our future, are astounding and overwhelming and numberless. But following Christ also changes our life, our future, in some hard ways. You're called to surrender everything to Him if you want to follow Him. Oh, we've lost that in our culture today, in our churches today, I should say. We've lost so much of that. It's come to Jesus, sign this card, join the church, and you're in and you're good to go. That was not the message Jesus preached. He said, you want to follow me? It will cost you everything. It means you'll have to step out by faith at times in some huge ways to be obedient to where He's calling you. Following Christ means you'll face criticism and ridicule at times. It'll mean loss of friends at times. It'll mean suffering, yes. And for many, it means persecution. But I think those things are not even what are most difficult for us. I think surrendering our will to Him for the future is what is hardest for us to do. Surrendering our will to Him. We all want to map out our lives and plan our future so that things will go our way. Do we not? We all want this. We want things to go our way in the future. And so when Jesus comes in and He says, I want you to surrender your future to me, it goes against everything in us. Following Christ means coming to the place where we can truly say, as Jesus said, not my will, but thy will be done. Many years ago, I was wrestling with this very thing in my life. Oh, I was a Christian. I knew I was saved. I was in church. I was tithing. I was serving. I was doing all the stuff that a, quote, good Christian is supposed to do. But I had never fully surrendered my future to him. I was clinging to my plans for my future so tightly that my knuckles were white. And I came to this crossroads where God was dealing with me on this very issue of my future. It's not just enough to say, thank God for forgiving my past. It's not just enough to say, thank God that he is with me in the present. Phil, you are refusing to surrender your future to me. And I tell you, I wrestled with this. I wrestled with it. And I wanted some tangible way for me to be able to finalize this decision. And so I did something very simple. I've shared this with you before, but I will share it with you again for those who are new or just as a reminder for all of us and for myself. At that time, I was in the business world, and a lot of our clients were Fortune 500 companies, and so we lived in a world of contracts, constantly reading contracts and signing contracts and having attorneys involved. And if you've ever noticed one thing about the other party's contract, it's all in their favor. It's all to make sure things come out well for them. And so there's all this fine print and these exclusions and, we have an attorney here today, so he could tell you all about it. But I lived in that world of constantly reading contracts, and it's like we were always getting our attorney to make sure that we were covered, that we wouldn't be unfairly exposed or left holding the bag. And so we would put things in the contract to make sure that everything would turn out well for us. And God said to me one day, Phil, you're doing the same thing with me. You say you've given me your future, but you've got all kinds of fine print. You got all kinds of things written in there. God, I will follow you as long as. God, I will follow you if. And he said, Phil, you've got to give it all to me. And so I got a piece of paper, and I typed at the top, my contract with God. And at the bottom, I signed it, and I dated it, and I left it blank. It seems silly, I know. It's just a piece of paper to you, but it's not to me. This, for me, years ago, and I pull it out once in a while, and I look at it, and I hold it, and I remember. This, for me, was the day when I cemented it once and for all, forever. I said, God, I give you my future. No fine print. It's all yours. And so the question is, are you trusting him with your future? The way you know whether or not you are is not that you say you are. It's whether or not you've surrendered your plans, your dreams, your expectations, your future, your life completely to him. And say, God, whatever you want to do with me, do it. Mary and Joseph would never have planned this future for themselves. Never. Mary was pregnant and she wasn't even married yet. She wouldn't have planned to face the gossip and the ridicule for her entire life that she had to face for having this, quote, illegitimate child that everyone said he was. She would never have planned that for her future. She would never have planned to have to make the trip to Bethlehem when she's about to give birth, and for there to be no place for them to even stay and give birth in a stable. She would never have planned that. She would never have been planned to be stirred from her sleep in the middle of the night by Joseph saying, "Honey, get up, get Jesus, we've got to get out of here," and flee to Egypt and live as refugees in Egypt. She would never have planned that. And yet, why was she willing to go through with that? Because after she wrestled with those initial fears and questions when the angel first came to her, Luke 1:38 says, she responded this way, "Behold, I am the servant of the Lord. Let it be to me according to your word." That's total surrender. Joseph would never have chosen for his fiancée to show up pregnant with this completely unbelievable story. He would never have chosen that. He would never have chosen to go through all of these things that he and Mary had to go through. And yet, after his initial doubts and fears, he submitted to God's plan and he willingly bore all the hardship that came with it. That's total surrender. We've seen how Christmas, how the coming of Christ brings forgiveness to our past, it brings peace to our present, and it brings hope to our future, despite the difficult things that we know will come. And I think the future is the hardest one of those three for us to deal with. It's so hard to completely trust God with our future. Jesus said in Matthew 6, "Do not worry about tomorrow." And then he went on and told them why they shouldn't worry about tomorrow, about their future, because he's watching over us and he will care for us. And at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves, do I trust him? Do I believe so much in his word that what he has said is true, that I'm willing to trust him with my future? I don't know all that your future will hold, but I do know that you can trust him with your future. As the old saying goes, God has not brought you this far just to leave you now. Are you banking on and counting on your own plans to get you safely through the future, or are you trusting him? Do we remember Proverbs 3, 5, and 6? Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Corrie ten Boom said, "Never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God." Do you want to honor God with your future? The greatest way you can do that is to trust him with it. Walking in obedience to what God's plan is for your life will lead to more glory for him than anything you could think of on your own. Did you catch that? Trusting in God's plan for your life, for your future, will bring him more glory than anything you and I can ever come up with on our own. So it not only benefits us to trust him with our future, it brings him glory. I assure you, at the time when all of this was going on, these events that we've read about today, this bloody scene taking place in Bethlehem and all the vicinities around it, and Mary and Joseph having to scoop up baby Jesus and run for their lives and living as refugees and then coming back and even not even being settled then, and all of these things, I assure you, when all of that was going on, Mary and Joseph couldn't see how any good could ever come from that. But they surrendered to God's plan. And from all of that difficulty, God brought about salvation for the world. Maybe you can't see how God is going to bring about anything good from what you're going through right now. My last question is this. Are you willing to trust him with your future? Let's pray.
You've been listening to a broadcast from Life Point Church in Greenville, South Carolina. If this ministry has touched your life in some way, we would love to hear from you. Just visit our website at www.lifepointsc.org for more information. Or, if you prefer to reach us by letter, you can write to us at P.O. Box 27036, Greenville, South Carolina, 29616, USA. Until next time, may God bless you as you continue to follow Him.
Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my